Hello, listeners. Nina here to tell you that I am now booking podcast sponsorships for this spot right here at the beginning of the show for the fall. If you are interested because you are an author or you are a coach or you have any kind of business that you think listeners of this show would want to know about, this is a great opportunity for you. Find any details you need about how to sponsor episodes up to 2, 3, or 4 weeks, newsletter posts, and social media posts. Look in the show notes under how to sponsor an episode. You will get all the information you could possibly need. I will let you know what's available and I will enjoy working with you. Now on to the episode.
I was like, well, what if I try this as a story about a bunch of friends, which is what I like to read from different perspectives, just make the heart of it about friendship and about the impact of witnessing a friend in childhood, what that ripple effect is on all of those people, not just the person who was impacted, the patient, but on all of the loved ones and the people around them. I had no background in fiction and it just clicked.
Welcome to Dear Nina, Conversations About Friendship. I am your host, Nina Badson. Been writing about friendship for over 10 years, podcasting about it for 4 years. Today's episode is actually coming out right before my live event in Chicago in Highland Park, where I grew up. There's a reason I'm putting this episode right before then. Part of the element of this live event is that a portion of ticket sales are going to National Pediatric Cancer Foundation. The event is being hosted at my favorite store in Highland Park, Enaz, and they are very generously donating 15% of all sales that day at really any of their locations, not just the Highland Park location, to National Pediatric Cancer Foundation. Part of the reason that is important to me, other than just always feeling for any family going through pediatric cancer in their family, and especially the child who is going through treatment and missing school and everything that goes along with dealing with cancer, is that my nephew, my sister's son, died in 2017 of brain cancer. And he was 11 when he was diagnosed. He fought hard for 11 months, leaving behind my sister, his two sisters, and his father and his step parents. He had DIPG, which is a certain kind of aggressive and very difficult to treat brain tumor. I don't talk about it much on the podcast. I don't feel it's my story to tell, but I did have his stepdad, my brother-in-law, on, and I'll link that episode. And Dave, my brother-in-law, is also one of the people who was really instrumental in helping me start the podcast. At the very beginning, he was helping me produce it, helping me edit it. He taught me so much, and I'm so grateful to Dave. And he then also came on as a guest, and we talked a little bit about that period of life when Joshua was sick and just the importance of friends and how community and friends came together. Today's episode also has that topic in mind. I'm speaking to author Amy Blumenfeld, who herself had cancer as a child, different kind of cancer. She did survive. She has done a lot of writing about and thinking about, of course, adult survivors of childhood cancer. We get into her story and how she turned that experience into fiction, and how the friendship that was so important and necessary and life-saving for her family and for her in that time became the seeds for her first novel many, many years later. And I will let Amy tell that story herself. Just to tell you a little bit about Amy, she is an award-winning author and journalist, a graduate of Barnard College and Columbia University. She received her master's degree in journalism from Columbia. Her essays and articles have been in the New York Times, Oprah Magazine, People Magazine, all kinds of places. Her debut novel, The Cast, was selected as a New York Post Best Book of the Week, and Such Good People is her second novel, and we talk about both here. I don't normally go into such deep detail about people's books because I really feel strongly that it can be hard to listen to a story about a book without having read the book, and I actually myself have not read these two novels yet, but I really want to, and I'm excited to read them, especially after talking to Amy. But in this case, it really made sense because Amy's origin story of going through cancer herself as a child and the way her community came together. Both her childhood friend community and her parents' community was just so instrumental in how these books came to be that we had to get into it. It's a huge part of the story. So you can see why I wanted this episode to be right before my event that is raising money for National Pediatric Cancer. Thank you for being here, and let's hear from Amy. Hi, Amy. Welcome to Dear Nina.
Thanks for having me.
This is going to be an extra special episode because I don't always have the chance to go so far back into a guest's childhood. Your experience and story is so extraordinary. It does factor into your work, but I want us to build there. And I want you to take us on the journey of your experience. And somebody who may have read your work will already know, but I think it will be new for some of my listeners.
Sure. I am born and bred in Queens, New York. I grew up going to a Jewish day school, and my parents were active in our local synagogue. I went to the nursery school there. My parents had all of their friends. It was this vibrant community. My friends were my parents' friends' children. When I was 13, I actually had scoliosis, and it was in a body cast for 3 months. I got out of the body cast, thought everything was fine, came home with a virus. They thought it was just any old virus. I never got better. And eventually it was diagnosed when I was in eighth grade as Hodgkin's lymphoma, a form of cancer. I then had about 11 months of chemotherapy at a local hospital, and we thought I was fine. I didn't even lose my hair. They said, all right, great. You're in remission. See ya. And a month after that, all the symptoms came back. And so my parents switched hospitals. They brought me to Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in Manhattan. I became the first adolescent with Hodgkin's disease to have an autologous bone marrow transplant. And so they had done this on other kids with leukemia and other diseases, but they had never done it on an adolescent with Hodgkin's.
Just for the listeners, you were about 14 at this point or 15?
At this point, I was turning 15. Yeah.
And what year are we in?
89. So I was diagnosed in 88. And at the point that I went into the hospital for the transplant, it was 89. At this point, I was in the end of ninth grade. I went into an isolation room for 2 months, and they destroyed my immune system and then built it back with my own marrow. I had high dose of chemo, high dose of radiation, the whole shebang. And then eventually, after about 2 months, I came out of that. But while I was in there, and this is really the heart of all of it, is that that community that I grew up in really rallied. Not only did they come and they donated blood and they, you know, supported and took care of my brother and brought him to baseball games and took him to their house to make dinner while he was doing his homework while my parents were busy with me. They created this videotape called Amy Night Live because I was obsessed with Saturday Night Live at the time. I still am. They did 90 minutes of just silliness and skits, Saturday Night Live. They brought it to me in the hospital. It was one of the greatest gifts that I ever received. So it was about 40 people, my parents' friends from the synagogue and their kids, about 10 families.
So the adults were in it too?
Oh, completely. Yeah, it was directed and run by the adults. I mean, the book is fictionalized, inspired by what actually happened.
And we should pause to remind people that it wasn't like so easy to make a video. This isn't like picking up your iPhone and having 8,000 apps that you can edit with. I mean, this is like real work.
They had all those gigantic Sony Handycam things, you know, with microphone, the whole shebang. They did it in the multi-purpose room of the synagogue. There was a bar mitzvah going on upstairs. The caterer was bringing the extra food down to this multi-purpose room so that the family that were making this video for me could have a little nosh. It was just the kindest, most thoughtful gift. And then the kids, some of them came to visit me. Some of them were too afraid to come because you had to wear a gown and a mask and a hat and booties and gloves and the whole thing because it was an isolation room. So it was a little overwhelming for many of them. But my parents' friends came and they visited and they donated blood. It was that community that really became my model for what friendship should be. You are there during the hard times, and then you're there to get on the dance floor and celebrate during the great times. That's what these people were. Years later, I wanted to become a broadcast journalist. That was my dream. My goal in life was to be the anchor on the local New York news. And so I went to graduate school for journalism. They ask you, at Columbia at least, they ask you to do a master's project. And they say, pick a topic that will sustain your interest throughout the course of the year. I had no idea what I wanted to write about. And true to form, I left it to the very last second to submit my topic. The day before the topic was due, I went to my annual checkup at Sloan Kettering. And so I'm sitting there in the pediatrics department. I'm 22 years old at the time. And so this is several years after my transplant. I was sitting there in my little reporter's notebook, jotting down different ideas of potential topics for this master's project. Nothing was sticking. Everything was boring. The woman sitting to my right taps my shoulder. She's like, oh, are you waiting for somebody? And I said, no. So I pulled up and I showed her my wristband that had my name. I said, no, I'm a patient. And she was sort of taken aback. And she started asking me all these questions because her daughter, who was 15, was sitting to her right.
Oh.
And so she asked me all these questions about survivorship, how long I was out of treatment and what it was like. And after that appointment, I walked back from the east side to the west side across the park. And I'm like, all right, I got my topic. It's about adult survivors of childhood cancer. And so I ended up writing my master's project in journalism school about that. And then at graduation, my professor said, you need to turn this into a book. I'd never dreamed of writing a book. That was the first seed that was planted. And he didn't say what kind of book. And I was like, all right, well, it's probably going to be nonfiction, a series of interviews with survivors, and then I'll turn it into something. But at the time, I was 23. I had no job. I needed money. I needed rent. I needed health insurance. I couldn't just take time off to write a book. When I had a free moment here and there on the weekends or whenever, I would sock away a chapter and I would continue to interview people. I continued to stay up on the research and everything that was going on in the survivorship community. Eventually, it was turning into this really boring series of interviews that I would not read. I was like, all right, well, maybe I'll write a little bit of a memoir. It was not working.
What were you doing for work in the meantime?
So in the meantime, I was working as a magazine editor. I realized in graduate school that I was not cut out to be on TV. It was like a different type of writing. I was better in print. I got a job as an editor and staff writer, first at American Health magazine, and then I was a staff writer at George magazine, John F. Kennedy Jr.'s.
I remember George magazine. Oh, it was so cool. It was a beautiful pages.
I actually have the posters in my house, some of them that were in our office when we folded.
I mean, it's like a historical moment. I mean, it was larger, I feel like. It was a physically bigger magazine. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah.
Quick break to let you know that Friendship Day is coming up on August 3rd, and it's a great excuse to let your friends know how important they are to you. A big part of maintaining those bonds is to show your friends they're appreciated. If you're baking cookies, for example, make extra and drop them off for your friend. Sharing quality time is so important, and Wesson Cooking Oil wants to make that happen for one lucky person. In honor of Friendship Day, our friends at Wesson are giving away a girls' night out valued at $500. Find the contest at Wesson on Instagram and look for the pinned post to find out how to participate. Good luck, everyone, and back to the show.
Mm-hmm. Gosh, yeah. Okay. I was writing a piece at the time, actually, about kids who grew up in the White House. And so I interviewed the children of former U.S. presidents. We had this big feature spread out, and then we folded with that issue, of course. And so the editor-in-chief at the time, he set up a meeting with People Magazine, and then People Magazine said, come, continue to report it for us. And they ended up running it as a big story for People. From there, I started freelancing, and that's what I was continuing to do. But all this time, this thing was sitting inside of me. I couldn't get rid of this book. I knew whether it was my own need to fulfill this suggestion from my professor, or if there was just this need. I knew I wasn't going to medical school, and this was my way to give back to the cancer community. This was my contribution. I could not let go of this book, and I did not know what form it was going to take. Life goes on. Get married. I have my daughter. One day I'm thinking, all right, I got to do something with this. It's not working out in all these other formats. What would I want to read? I like contemporary fiction. So I was like, well, what if I try this as a story about a bunch of friends, which is what I like to read, from different perspectives, and then just make the heart of it about friendship and about the impact of witnessing a friend in childhood, what that ripple effect is on all of those people, not just the person who was impacted, the patient, but on all of the loved ones and the people around them. So I had no background in fiction, and it just clicked.
So you have some of your own experience in there. Did you also have all those interviews you had done earlier, maybe thinking this might be a nonfiction? Did some of that make its way, do you think?
For sure. I had my own experience, but there's so many other people's long-term experiences, especially at that time. We were sort of guinea pigs in the first generation, the generation before. The high-dose radiation really could make you deformed in so many ways or have serious long-term effects physically and emotionally. And it still is the case, but over time it got better in terms of the treatments. They improved things. You don't necessarily look at somebody now from my generation and say, you were sick. I don't know if you would look at me and necessarily know, but there's a whole bunch of scars and background, and that's there. And I think it's important to sort of share those stories so people don't feel alone, but also to see that it's not just, as I said, not just the person who is in treatment. This impacted siblings, it impacted parents, it impacts your spouse down the road, it impacts your children down the road, it impacts your friends in various ways, it impacts your relationships and your priorities and the way you select friends and who's going to make the cut and who's not worth your time. And it's just everything. And so for me and for many people, it changes perspective. I thought that was worthwhile. And also religion too, that's a really interesting one. It impacts faith and your career choice. There's a ripple effect in many, many.
I'm thinking about this whole ripple effect that we're talking about and the way that the experience of having a child with cancer obviously affected you, the person going through treatment and being in junior high when you first are having symptoms and through, right? It's like when you're the very first time, then into high school, then your parents and their friends and their community. I have to imagine that some people really rose up in ways that were unexpected. And did they become closer?
For sure. My parents' friends who were really there for my brother and for me and for my parents became to this day like second parents to me.
I also grew up with parents who have very close friends, and it is an extended family in a way. This is who you count on, except when something really severe happens where you need not just the theory of help, like, oh, you know, people would be there for you, but you actually need someone to pick up the younger brother and take him to school and keep him on the weekend. And all. You don't always know until you're tested how people are able to step up. So when you did the fiction version in your book, The Cast, I'm curious how much of your personal story fully made it in there.
It's so funny. People think they know the truth. They don't.
Right.
There are definitely elements. I took the most important things that I wanted to get across and I put that in there, but then I twisted it and I made it more dramatic. I went off in other directions and I lifted from other people, from their stories, and I put it in the main character's story. So there were some things that I wanted to get in there. The long-term effects, which is what happens to Becca, the main character. There are long-term effects from treatment, especially back then when they didn't know what they were doing. And the main goal was to save a life. There was also this goal of, okay, we're going to save the life and also try to ensure that there's a quality to that life that we're saving. It didn't always work out. And there were also these long-term effects. I wanted to get, as part of a long-term effect, fertility. That was a big one. With me, I was very fortunate. I was able to have my daughter. And so she's biologically me and we look alike and she's my husband, but I wasn't able to carry because of the radiation that I had. And so we used a surrogate to have my daughter. I wanted to have that story and the story of teaching my daughter to be proud and to not be ashamed of her birth story. I put that into the book. And so that was from me. But a lot of the other parts were just the mix of a story from here, a story from there. I sort of chopped up the impact of religion, the impact of that connection, that tethering to your friend, and career also, the impact that it has on career and priorities and choosing a spouse and really what matters to you, and seeing it all from the perspective of, oh my God, how short life can be and how that played out on all of the friends in different ways. The Cast is essentially like The Big Chill, I say, meets The Fault in Our Stars. It's a reunion of old friends. It is so not a cancer book, but it's about how, you know, all these friends are, it's a reunion. 25 years after their friend goes through cancer treatment, she's fine. She survives. They all reunite for a weekend in the country over July 4th, and all of their lives are in different places. And it comes back to that illness, but it's not about the illness.
I can't wait to read it. I don't know how I haven't read it yet. It's so my kind of book. I'll definitely be reading it. I can't talk about it yet because I haven't read it yet. It's such a good premise. Was it easy to find an agent? I bet it was. When I read just what the book's about in the way that it's written on the back of the book, it's so compelling. I know that query letters and getting an agent, I mean, there's probably many iterations. How hard was it to get it published?
Funny, the beginning when it wasn't fiction, when it was the survey of interviews, and then it was the memoir, nobody wanted it. When I put it together and I pitched it exactly the way I just explained it to you, someone came through.
I knew that. I just could tell because, I mean, I've been in the whole like trying to get an agent world a long time ago when I was writing fiction. I know it's not easy to get an agent, so I wasn't suggesting it would be. It's just that this story and the way you say it is so, to me, a no-brainer as a book. So I'm not surprised that it got scooped up.
The community that I grew up in really inspired me, and they created that model for me. Friendship really is at the core of my work. And so Such Good People, my second book, I knew that I wanted to write another book that had at the heart of it, long-term friendship, childhood friendship, but I didn't want to write about health. I didn't want to do anything medical. I grew up hanging on our wall was Sedex Sedativ in our living room, justice, justice shall you pursue. And my dad, when I was young, was a criminal defense lawyer at the Legal Aid Society in the Bronx. When I was in seventh grade, he became a judge, but when he, a criminal court judge. But when I was young, he would have his colleagues come over to our house and they would discuss their case around our dining room table. And so I would listen to them plotting out, talking about the fact patterns. When he was as a judge, I used to sit with him on the bench and during arraignments particularly, and I would watch this whole drama unfold. And it was a whole language and the action with the prosecutors and the defense attorneys and the defendant. But directly in my line of sight, across from the bench, were the pews, the audience section, where these loved ones of the people were sitting. I didn't know if they were there for the defense or from the side of the prosecution. All I could see were these angst-riddled faces directly in my line of sight. And I'm like, what's their story? That has stayed in my head for many years. When I knew that I wanted to write a second novel and I wanted it to be about friendship, I was like, I want it to be about the criminal justice system. I have just no clue what that's going to be. Eventually, we were invited to a gala event for a fundraiser for a halfway house. We have a family friend who's involved administratively. And so we just got put on the invite list for this. We were not able to go, but we ended up receiving their newsletters. And I read the newsletter. They were profiling some of these teachers that worked at the halfway house, and they were fascinating profiles. And some of those teachers had their own criminal past, and their background of being incarcerated inspired them when they got out to become teachers and help people transition after they were incarcerated back into society and to give them a leg up. That's how I created April, the main character for my new book, Such Good People. I was like, all right, she's got to have a childhood friend who inspired this. What happened to that childhood friend? What happened between them? It's about the lengths that you go to for the people that you love. It impacts her kids at school. It impacts her husband. And she is then torn between showing up for her best friend who risked and sacrificed so much for her in this beautiful life that she created in Chicago, and her husband needs her at home. It's part of the story.
Yes, right. Of course, there's more in there. I remember when you and I were first talking about doing an episode and we were sort of playing around with the idea of loyalties. And I'm even thinking way back to your first book and your actual real life experience. And that is hard when your friends need you, like your parents and their friends, the way they showed up for your family. I try to advise people through that. Sometimes you just have to choose and someone's going to be disappointed. The family's going to be disappointed or the friends are going to be disappointed because we talk a lot on the show about showing up and showing up and showing up. And you can't actually show up for everything. And then if you care a lot about being a good friend, I mean, that eats away at us too.
Yep, absolutely. It's tough. There's a lot of gray areas. There's these dual loyalties and you just do the best you can.
Even in happy times, there's times when more so in my 20s, I remember, but there'd be a friend's wedding, a good, really good friend, and a cousin's wedding the same weekend.
You try to please everybody. It doesn't always work.
Can't be in two places.
That's the essence of the book, but it's similar and in spirit to the cast in the sense that it's based on the childhood friendship. It's about that commitment to these people who mean so much. And what do you do?
My final question, and then we'll wrap up, is how are readers responding to both books? Do people end up telling you about their friendships? Are they picking up on the huge friendship part of this story? Or do they want to talk more about the cancer part or the criminal justice part for the new book?
The greatest compliment for me is that people say it's thought-provoking. People are having different reactions. Some people are gravitating toward the social justice and the criminal justice part of it. Some people are really moved by the friendship and their heart is breaking. I think friendship is really at the heart of my books because it's so important to me. It was such a formative part of my childhood and my life. My friends are so important to me and they have been forever because of that model that was set for me. I really got to see the importance and the good in people. And I think it's also part of just going through these life cycles. You see people in times of celebration, you see them at their worst moments, and it's the ones that stick by you. and that you're there for and you want to be there for that mean the most. And that's what it's all about.
Beautiful. That's a perfect place to end. Everyone, you can find the cast and Such Good People anywhere you buy books, but I'll have direct links in the show notes too. Amy, thank you so much for being here and sharing your experience with us. I'm glad you are healthy and thank God for all those amazing doctors and teams.
Thank you so much for having me. I loved it.
Listeners, come back next week when our friendships are going well. We are happier all around.